of worship. Amen? Oh, it's just so, so good to be a part of a congregation that that loves the Lord, that loves to worship, and it's been another great morning. I love seeing the kids, and I was noticing all your girls, Joel, as we were singing this morning, and my wife pointed out Xander to me. I think Xander is also closing in on your heels, Tommy, and one of these days, probably pretty soon, he's going to be taken over because that little guy loves to sing too. So that was really, really a special thing to have not just adults who love worshiping, but love worshiping enough that our kids are picking up on that. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. It has been a great week. And it's been a great week for me personally, for our family. I have to confess that it's been really exciting this week. We got to go and see my son. On Thursday night, he's in the University of Tennessee Marching Band, Pride of the Southland Band, and we got to go, and it was their first game of the year, first show of the year, and the game was super exciting. I understand that, but I do not understand the band at all. I just know it's like fun, and it's exciting, and so now I'm a band dad, and I didn't know I was a band dad, but apparently I have been a band dad all this time. And just didn't know it, and it was pretty awesome. So we got to spend a little bit of time with Jonathan on Thursday and Friday, and then last night Addison got to compete in the Coffee County Fairest of the Fair, and congratulations to the Coffee County Fairest of the Fair. Did not know I was a pageant dad either. This was her. People were like, I did not know Addison did pageants, and. We didn't know that either. It was her, I would say it was her first pageant. She did one, it was a smaller, she was not quite two at the time. And some friends of ours wanted to dress her up and put her in this little pageant. We were in West Tennessee, but that's our only pageant experience. And she didn't remember much of that. And so it was super exciting for us to get to be a part of that and to see that. And we were like there, just like, you know, when she made top 10, all we were like, oh, this is amazing. All these other girls are like, they're pageant girls. Like, they know what to do. We didn't know what to do or anything. And then we were like, she made top 10. And then they announced top 5. And I was so excited. And I was kind of talking with Rebecca. And then just 3 or 4 minutes later, Rebecca goes, oh, she made top 5. And she was like, I got to take some pictures now. And we're kind of mad scrambling to get to that. And then I was so excited, went to the back. It was just like all these girls had their families and friends and everybody. It was just me and Rebecca. And Raylan, of course, was cheering her on heartily. But Raylan did not know Addison was going to be there either, I don't think. And Holly Matthews was there because of their ties to the pageant and with Caroline. And so when they were doing top 5, I was like, this is awesome. She made top 5 and take pictures. And they're like, 4th runner-up, 3rd runner-up, 2nd runner-up. And I was like, oh, my goodness, she has made 1st runner-up. And then they announced this. I was like so excited. And then when she won, we didn't know what to do. And I'm pretty sure we might have made fools of ourselves. But it was awesome. I could not go to sleep. I did not even know I got excited about pageants, but I could not go to sleep last night and this morning. Addison's got to go, and she's got to do this other stuff with now that she's a queen. And and so I was thinking, like, what if, you know, what if we just wore the crown to church? And then she was like, no, you cannot wear my crown to church. And I thought, the bobby pins don't stick in my hair very well anyway. But anyway, it was super exciting. So it's been a really wild sort of few days for us. And I got to be honest, I am looking forward to Labor Day. Just a day to, for me at least, get to settle in and be. And some of you get that experience as well, just a day off. Have you ever felt like you just needed that time, just a little bit of space? You don't have to, like, lay in a barca lounger all day or anything, or you don't have to take a vacation to some seaside resort. Just a day to be, like, just relax a bit. Have you ever felt like that? Now, some of you may, like me, even be fortunate enough to do work that you love, and yet we still eagerly look forward to those days, whatever those days are, whether they're weekends or they're vacations or they're just holidays, just time away from whatever your daily grind is. And if you work a job that's especially difficult or stressful, or a job that you don't really find fulfilling or rewarding, then those days, those special away days, those are like coming up for air. Like you start the week looking forward to those days. And if we're being all completely honest, I think no matter what our work may be, whenever we take that step back, whether we're off for a day or 2 days, and we take a step back and we look at exactly what it is we have been doing, what it is that we do, sometimes it can feel a little bit like we're not making a lot of progress, like we're just doing the do, spinning our wheels, so to speak, working and working without actually making any real progress or headway. And we're not alone in that feeling, by the way, and not even in modernity. As much as we talk about and focus on work, it's kind of always been that case. Even the great thinker of the book of Ecclesiastes asks the same thing. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 3, he says, "What do people gain from all their labors from which they toil under the sun?" I mean, what do we get from it? Essentially, he's asking this question. This is our question for the morning. What is our work really for? Now, I can't imagine that there's anyone among us who hasn't at least woken up some morning, probably a Monday morning, and asked, "Why am I even doing this?" Whatever it is we do. Now, you may not have spent a lot of time in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's one of my favorites. I've got several, but I really do love the book of Ecclesiastes because it's written by a wise philosopher who's not named in the book, but most people believe it's probably written by Solomon. There are some indications that, at the very least, he says he was a king in Jerusalem of Israel. So he was an important figure in their state. And so he probably had a privileged life, certainly different than the work you or I most likely are doing, a more privileged life than we're living. But despite that, when you read the book of Ecclesiastes, you're like, this guy is kind of asking a lot of the same questions I'm asking. He sounds like he could be one of us. I mean, thousands of years later and cultures apart, and he's wrestling with the same questions that are at the heart of a human life. What does it mean to be a good human? And Ecclesiastes certainly speaks to me as someone who sometimes wakes up on a Monday morning and wishes it was still Sunday. Or if you're a preacher who doesn't like your job, you wake up on Sunday morning and wish it was still Saturday. Just a day less, right? But it seems to me that the Ecclesiastes question even reaches deeper and wider than this. He asks not just, why am I going to this job, but he's asking, like, why work at all? I mean, ever. Why do any work? Is work itself worthless? Now, whatever you might want to say about Ecclesiastes when you get a chance to read it, you've got to admit this. The writer of Ecclesiastes does not beat around the bush a lot. We would say he calls a spade a spade. He speaks from the heart, and he does it with personal experience. So time and again, Ecclesiastes struggles to discover what's the advantage in this, what's the advantage in that, and what advantage, if any, are we getting from work? I mean, he touches on that same theme really throughout the book, but today we're just going to concentrate on one of those passages from the book of Ecclesiastes, and it comes from chapter 2. And this is what he says in verses 5 and 6. He says, "I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them, and I made reservoirs of water groves to water groves of flourishing trees." Now, we'll just pause right there. I mean, that sounds like a pretty rewarding work, doesn't it? I mean, for people who like to work outside, this would sound like a dream job. You get to plant all these trees and make groves and build amazing houses, and you have these gardens, and I mean, it just sounds spectacularly rewarding. And yet, this is what he says in verse 6. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. All that work, all the projects, not just all the physical labor, but all the planning and organizing that go into it, all of the hiring, you have to hire people to do the brickwork and the groundwork and it was all of that. And he said, it just feels like another dead end in life when I get to the end of the day. Like there's no escape. Like I'm on a hamster wheel, and I'm doing and I'm doing and I'm doing, but I'm not really going anywhere, and I can't get off this hamster wheel of work. Just this past week, I was listening to a story. I had to do a lot of driving one day, and so I found myself listening to podcasts, and I heard the story of Little Houdini. Christopher Daniel Gay. Now, some of you who are lifelong residents of Coffee County may already be acquainted with this story. I heard it on a national radio podcast and didn't know anything about him and never heard of him, but he was born here in Coffee County into abject poverty. No running water, no electricity, washing clothes in the river, scrounging for food, and often going hungry. And his family life was really, really tumultuous, and that's just putting it mildly. So before he was even a teenager, Chris was forced to steal just to survive. He said it started with bicycles, and then it was, lawnmowers, motorcycles, four-wheelers, then some construction equipment and cars and trucks and semis, and eventually what he became famous for was stealing Christopher Gale's tour bus and driving it all the way down to Florida. And that's all kind of the lore. But what makes his story the stuff of legend was his ability to escape. By his count, he had escaped some 13 different jails and prisons. He had faked his own suicide. He dressed up as a guard. He'd done all of these things and just always found a loophole, found a way out of where he was locked up. And all these jails, all these prisons just saw him slip through their fingers. He was a small guy. He's like 5'5", 130 pounds, and he just had the ability to slip right through. And time and again, he would do that. He would just repeat the cycle. He would start over and start a new life and find some sort of legitimate work. And then he would get behind on bills, and he would get desperate. And then he wanted to get ahead. And so he would steal, and then he would get caught, and then he would go to jail. And then he would escape, and he would start it all over again, again and again and again. And I listened to this interview that was actually from a few years back. He was locked up in a Tennessee state prison, but he was pledging this time. He says, my parole comes up in a few months, but when my parole comes up, what I'm going to do is I'm going to continue taking these classes I'm enrolled in. I'm going to ask if they'll let me stay longer. I'm not trying to escape anymore. I want to get out of this pattern, these habits, and so I want to become a better husband. He had gotten married, become a better father. He had a daughter, and he said, I just want to be a better member of society. And so he did that. His parole came up. He made a request, and they allowed him to stay in prison in order to finally escape his habits, his cycle, his past. And while I would love to say that was the last I heard of it, I just saw this month that he'd been arrested again, this time in a multi-state theft ring, because it appears that he could escape virtually anything except for himself. And essentially, that's what the author of Ecclesiastes is saying. He says later in chapter 2, he says, what do people get for all the toil and anxious striving for which they labor under the sun? All their day of work is grief and pain. Even at nights, their minds do not rest. this too is meaningless. He's saying all this work we do, all this getting up early, all this working late, all the worry and the trying to get ahead that we do day after day after day after day. He says all this trying to accomplish something, it's meaningless. That this Monday, or if you get to stay off until Tuesday morning, when you climb out of bed to go to work, that you're not really doing anything, which is pretty doggone discouraging, right? So what are we supposed to do? I mean, just quit, give up, and go broke, and scrounge around? I mean, you might think so based on what he said so far, but it's at this point in his argument, in his discussion, when he reaches his lowest point, his point of greatest despair, that the writer of Ecclesiastes, he sort of finds a way forward, finds a way of dealing with this. And after exploring all of these different dead-end streets, all of these different avenues of life, the wise author of Ecclesiastes finally recognizes one road that goes somewhere, one road out of town. So in verse 24, he concludes, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. Work can be enjoyed, but, and this is vitally important, he says, but only when we have given up our quest for profit from all of it. That in fact, work is a gift from God and was never meant to be enjoyed apart from God. Now, you may be thinking about your particular job, whatever it is that you do, and thinking, this work is a gift from God. I feel like it's more like a gift from the devil some days. I know exactly how you feel. Bus ministry. Right? This work that I do, these people that I work with, this bureaucracy that I have to wrestle with, these silly rules or this bad manager or these long hours or the health problems that I have, all that can go and we can get from work, you're thinking that is a gift from God? But work in and of itself, the accomplishment and getting ahead, which is mostly the way we think about work, that was never meant to be an end into itself. Rather, it's about working for and with God. That work itself is not the road. The road is life with God, and work can just be a part of that. And it's how hundreds of years after writing the book of Ecclesiastes, the Apostle Paul picks up on a similar theme. And he's writing to particularly Christian slaves who do the most menial and dehumanizing labor in all of the Roman Empire. These people who were captives and slaves, he writes to them and says to them, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. And do it not only when their eye is on you to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ that you're serving. Satisfaction and fulfillment can be found even in our work, even when we don't love the work, but satisfaction and fulfillment can be found when we realize that work can never be the whole meaning of life. Now, you, like me, when I first read that, I thought, that's crazy. I don't think work is the whole meaning of life. You probably don't think work is the whole meaning of life either. That's a crazy sentence. I seriously doubt if any of us believe that our work is the whole meaning of our life. But how often are we seduced into living like it is? How much are we and our self-image and our self-esteem derived not from the richness toward God, but from what we've accomplished in the world? You know, I'm a grown man. I'm I'm almost an adult now, and I have gone to school for lots of years, and I've gotten some degrees, and I work at a couple of jobs that I really love, and if you were to meet me for the first time and ask me who I was, those would be among the first things that I shared about myself, as describing who I am. And in a strange way, I have allowed what I do to define me. And maybe you've done that too, whether it's a job you love or a job you hate, whether you're doing it on stacks of college degrees or you're doing it by the skin of your teeth and the sweat of your brow, and you just say, that's who I am. I'm the person who does this, right? Some of us may be driven more by the paycheck that we get or what we've done with that paycheck, how we've invested or bought this or that. But in the end, Ecclesiastes says it's all the same. If you're doing it for the money, if you're doing it for the enjoyment, if you're doing it for the accomplishment, it's all the same thing. It's all meaningless. It is striving to find meaning from a place in life that was never meant to provide that. It's trying to get something out of nothing. But that's not to say that our work can't become meaningful. When whatever we do, we do it as for the Lord. So whether you're a student or a teacher or you're an employer or an employee, whether you work with your hands or you work with your head, whether you sit behind a computer screen or you crawl under a car, whatever it is you do, there is meaning to be found in that journey when it's a journey with the Lord. My prayer for us this week as we think about Labor Day coming up this morning, it's not that we be the people who bring home the most bacon or buy the best toys with what we bring home. Not that we become the smartest church or the hardest working church or that we can do the most stuff. But rather that we become people who bring meaning not only to our own work, but to the work of those we work alongside. Providing life and light and hope into what sometimes is a pretty discouraging environment. May God bless you and bless us as we labor this week. And if this morning we can pray for you, to lift you up, to encourage you, we want you to come now as we stand and as we sing.